The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's a Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, even folks in London know that time will not stop if you just shut Big Ben down for repairs. Little note to people in Pittsburgh that might want to think about that. We'll talk about how a demonic revenge plot could have an impact on tonight's college hardwoods. And yeah, we don't get to use our Bob Seger tickets till next Friday night, but at play of the daytime, we'll already be humming Hollywood Nights in the background.
So, Dave, Wednesday morning, lots of action on the hardwoods last night. What's your first take off of what you saw over the last 24 hours?
Something that maybe would be surprising to a lot of people, but probably shouldn't be. We watched UCLA play last night. We talked about Reeves Nelson and the issues that, you know, they were having with him, partially the team and also Ben Howland. But what have we seen the last two UCLA games? Kids playing loosely, confidently, having fun on the court, playing aggressively, kids flowing into their roles. This really looks like one of these situations in which it is addition by subtraction, that for all the skills that Nelson may have had, he was just too much of a distraction to the rest of the team. The chemistry is better without him. We still don't see a lot of upside from this UCLA team. Maybe life and death to have a winning record in the conference, get a postseason bid, maybe not the big dance. But just seeing the kids playing loose, relaxed, and confident, that was a whole different story than what we were seeing earlier when those Nelson issues seemed to be hampering the whole process. Teddy, what do you bring with you first thing on a Wednesday morning?
I got to talk about the game I lost last night with Old Dominion, plus the points. I had plus four against Richmond, and kind of broke the cherry on the new college basketball season. I have no complaints. When you suffer your first overtime loss with an underdog, and it's winter solstice, hey, you got nothing to complain about. Those are going to happen over the course of the season if you play underdogs, and you play underdogs that step up in hostile environments. Sometimes game's going to go to OT. Sometimes that OT's not going to work out the way that you liked, and of course, there's no overtime protection. I remember one book used to offer that offshore. I don't remember how that worked out, but best as I can tell, that book's not even in business these days. So you're not going to find that opportunity. But, you know, I'd already lost one game in college hoops by a half point. That came back in November. But really, the first OT loss with a dog, that's when the cherries popped on the season. I got no complaints when that happens winter solstice. You know, we're, you know, 6 weeks in to this college basketball season. Those losses can and will happen. The key here is to avoid those weeks where you have three losses by a half point and then two more losses with dogs and OT. That's what can start to turn a positive season in a negative direction. But the bottom line is they're going to happen. You accept them. You don't freak out. You don't smash your head against the wall. Come back today, whole new ball game. And of course, we got a whole new ball game for the Pittsburgh Steelers this week as we transition into Market Watch on a Wednesday. And still no lines up for the Steelers-Rams matchup for the coming weekend. Not a particularly compelling game for Pittsburgh, not a game where we expect the Steelers to be seriously challenged, but there's no question there are issues right now in Pittsburgh, particularly at that quarterback position.
And of course, that means issues for the sports books, you know, in this particular matchup. They can't get a lineup yet. They'd like to have their parlay cards out there. If you talk to most sportsbook directors in Las Vegas, they're not really thrilled with the NFL schedule this week with all the games on Saturday instead of Sunday. You lose that ability to write a little extra business. No parlay cards out there right now for the Steeler game because they won't make the decision that we think they should make. If you saw Ben Roethlisberger Monday night, you see a guy who needs a little bit of time off if they're going to make a run in the playoffs. But they won't do that. They won't certify it yet. Now, they did downgrade him to doubtful right before we went on the air today, but why don't they just say, look, we've won the Super Bowl in the past without the home field advantage. We don't mind going into a hostile environment where we think we could win. Let's give this guy a couple of weeks off. And why on earth was he still playing in the fourth quarter against San Francisco once the game could not have been won anymore? Now we find out, reading between the lines, there was some consideration for Mike Tomlin to take him out of the game. It was Roethlisberger himself who wouldn't let that happen.
Oh, yeah, look at the quotes. I got them right here, Dave. This is what Mike Tomlin said. Quote, we understand we open ourselves up to judgment when we make decisions like that. We live with that. Tomlin, a pretty confident guy as a head coach. Roethlisberger said, when coach tried to take me out, I said, no, I'm not putting you in that situation, and I'm not quitting on our guys. So obviously, you know, Big Ben's a competitor. He's a winner, and the track record clearly shows that. But there's this mentality in the NFL, in pretty much all professional sports, where I'm not going to quit on my teammates, even when it's a benefit to your team to sit down. Big Ben wasn't willing to do that. Now, if you're Mike Tomlin, if you're Ben Roethlisberger, if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, if you got a Steelers to win the AFC ticket in your pocket, which would you prefer? Do you want 100% healthy Big Ben and you have to go on the road and maybe win at Baltimore or win at New England or win at Houston? Or would you rather have Big Ben hobbled, playing behind a bad offensive line and a banged up offensive line, but still have that home field edge? And I think if you talk to any serious Steelers fan or any serious football fan, they'll say Pittsburgh's good enough to win on the road. Big Ben being healthy trumps Pittsburgh having that home field edge.
It's one of the things you really have to think about is we talk about home field a lot and what it's supposed to mean in the playoffs. But, okay, you're most likely going to run up against the Patriots and the Ravens. Well, guess what? They've both beaten you in Pittsburgh in recent years. The Ravens beat you in Pittsburgh this year. So it's not like your home field is that big. When you're playing New England, there's not a huge home field advantage either way. You're talking about two veteran teams with a lot of maturity. When you're talking about playing Baltimore, there's not a huge home field advantage either way. It's going to be a knockdown, drag-out, slugfest of a game. So this has got to be the time to say, you know what, let's do the right thing for this team. Not just take this week off, possibly take next week off as well. Steelers can win each of these last two games without Roethlisberger. Even without Roethlisberger this week, they're a double-figure favorite, probably 10 and a half, at least over St. Louis. So give the guy a little bit of a break, because the Roethlisberger we saw Monday night, unless he gets a little time off, he's not going to be able to lead you to a playoff win, whether you're home or away.
Well, the other question with Pittsburgh, I mean, who gets the start if Roethlisberger sits? Charlie Batch is ostensibly their number two quarterback. Charlie Batch isn't very good at this stage of the career. I don't know that he was ever very good, but at this stage, you know, if Pittsburgh's going to win, they're going to need a strong running game and their defense perhaps to score some points to give Charlie Batch an opportunity. Dennis Dixon, he's a playmaker out of the pocket, doesn't necessarily have the great arm strength that you see out of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I think Dixon might be the better choice for Pittsburgh, considering the state of that offensive line. Again, without Marquise Pouncey, who's, you know, a Pro Bowler, a guy that they desperately need to win in the postseason, it looked like he's going to play again this week. They've had, six different tackles starting this year, four different guards, and now issues at the center position. In this type of a situation where you have a banged-up offensive line, you need a QB with mobility. I think Dixon might be the better of the two choices.
And why not think outside the box? I think it doesn't happen enough in the NFL. Play both guys. Doesn't have to be an either-or. Play them both out there this week. Get both of them some quality experience so that if they do have to come into play in the playoffs, they'll be ready for it. That's what we would do. What Mike Tomlin's going to do, we're not sure yet. But Insider Six Pack tomorrow or Friday will get you the very, very latest out of Pittsburgh.
And speaking of tomorrow or Friday, we have to talk real briefly about the show schedule over the holiday weekends to come. We're going to be live Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Each of the next 2 weeks, we're going to be dark on Mondays. Dark the day after Christmas, 12/26, and dark the first Monday of the new year. That's January 2nd. So we'll be going live 4 days a week for the next 2 weeks. This week, of course, we're going live all five. Hey, you guys have been great about sending in emails, asking us questions, giving us commentary on what you like to see on this show. Please keep those emails coming. The address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay, and you can get involved in the covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/postingforum.
When we come back, it's going to be a Big Mac attack that might get you hungry to change some patterns on some betting trends. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think. Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical masks and gowns on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
On Monday, we teased a little bit about Cutty Sark, or some obscure reference that Malinsky was trying to make, and how the Clippers offered the rare exhibition setting in which we really were willing and supposed to step up to the betting windows. L.A., the Clippers may end up being better than L.A., the Lakers, long-term, but in particular right now, the Clips, man, they've got a real sense of urgency, and that's something that the Lakers don't seem to have. It means a lot for the Clippers to win from the start. And Mike Brown, the Lakers' new head coach, not Phil Jackson, Mike Brown, showed throughout his tenure in Cleveland, he didn't give one hoot about winning preseason games, and he's showing the same attitude with the L.A. Lakers at the Staples Center this evening. Quote, "We're going to try and play the right way, but I won't sacrifice us learning and getting better just to win the ball game." The results were easy to see. You know, 114-95 Clippers win and cover going away. Remember, they were dogs in that game. And now it's time for the same two teams to go at it again, this time with the Clipper fans getting the majority of seats. And yes, all of a sudden there is a such thing as a Clipper fan. The oddsmakers are going to have a difficult time pricing these two teams correctly right from the get-go. And it's certainly important enough to merit a post-mortem focus.
Of course, Cutty Sark has kind of gone out of vogue in the drinking culture. Cutty Sark was popular back before the single malt craze, before better whiskeys got out there. Cutty Sark was a good product, not a great one. But here's a little tip. If you want to be a little nostalgic, you could actually make an okay Christmas eggnog out of Cutty Sark. It actually plays okay that way. Okay, now back to basketball. The Clippers waxed the Lakers on Monday. But you know what? When we go into the postmortem and look deeper, it gets even worse. First, take a look at these minutes from Monday night. Andrew Bynum played 33, Paul Gasol played 30, Kobe Bryant played 29. No one on the Clipper team played more than 26. So that was the Lakers coming closer to their prime rotation than it was to the Clippers. We saw the Clippers consistently break the Laker defense down for easy opportunities, which is what you can do when you have so many point guards on the court. It's going to be fascinating to watch Chauncey Billups play with Chris Paul. Two all-star point guards playing together in the same offense. Billups is going to be the number two guy a lot of times. And Billups actually can play two at this point in his career, but he's a two that you could also create with. A lot of opportunities there. And then Mo Williams, who also has been in an all-star game at point guard, coming off the bench. Goes right into the weakest part of the Lakers. We're not just talking about the matchup in terms of tonight, but going forward. Where were the Lakers the weakest last year? At point guard. But in the triangle, you could play around that a little bit. You had the right passers in the right places, and you had Lamar Odom to sort of pick up the slack and run the offense at times. Well, now Odom is gone. Now you may have the worst point guards in the entire NBA, and you're putting in a little bit different system where there's more pressure on the point guards to be able to create. Because as each year goes by, Kobe's going to be a little less and less a part of creating the offense, instead becoming a spot-up shooter. So we see genuine weaknesses with the Lakers beyond Monday's score. We see strength with the Clippers that aren't even being talked about by most people. Yeah, Blake Griffin is terrific. Chris Paul, Chauncey Billups. Yeah, they're big time. What about DeAndre Jordan? Look at the upside this guy may have, because he doesn't have to carry a load. He can just develop and do what he does best. And a guy like Jordan, an extra guy to run the floor, to become a finisher on the fast break, a defensive presence, much more so than they had with Chris Kaman, who was a good low post offensive scorer, but not much of a defensive presence. A lot of upside there. Yeah, there could be a lot of issues in Los Angeles that the oddsmakers are going to struggle with for quite some time, so much so that we might even be talking about this game again before the show is over. Now we switch the focus to bowl talk a little bit. We've had a lot of emails coming in from people wanting us to give picks throughout the bowl season. Now, a lot of you said, look, I'm in a bowl pool. Can you help me out with straight up picks? Can you tell me what some of your best bets later are for parlays? A couple of problems there. One is we don't quite have the time to do it. You're going to see next week how jammed up we get in doing every bowl game here. Number two, we can't always give some of the best stuff out yet because we're not down completely yet. Sometimes you're waiting for numbers to position themselves up for you the right way. But here is something that we can talk about a little bit, and it has to do with trends and patterns. And why one of the things we'll do on this show is sometimes apparently buck a trend. And we're not really, but we see if something has gone too far in a certain direction, pendulums swing back. How do trends get created? They get created because the market has the wrong perception on something. The oddsmakers fall behind on a particular pattern. So now it gets out there and it starts to add up. And you get these 12 and 3s, these 15 and 4s, these 21 and 7s. But at a certain point, the odds makers do adjust, and they certainly do when they see money showing up for it. That's why trends tend to not run very long. We'll talk about 21 and 7s. Rarely on the show are we going to say, here's a 65 and 15. It just doesn't work that way. Not only do the odds makers adjust, but the pendulums of sport also come back into play, and they bring things back towards their proper level. So one of the things you could do as you look forward to some of these bowl games and filling out your pools, it's time to take a look at the Mid-American Conference. And we're sorry about the Big Mac references. We couldn't think of anything better to tie into them. I hope you're eating better during the holiday season.
Yeah, I already missed my L.A. Eagles reference, Dave. I was supposed to say there's a new kid in town in L.A., and therefore we have to mention the Eagles. Because Dave, he wants Big Mac references from commercials from the 80s.
I didn't want that one.
He wants Eagles references from the 70s. It's, you know, let's talk about the Mac. Because over the last 7 years, the Mid-American Conference, 6-16-1 straight up. And, of course, we use that tie for any game that goes into overtime. So 6-16-1 straight up, 7-15 against the spread. If you've been betting on MAC teams in bowl games during this span, you have been losing money. And if you've been betting against these MAC teams, obviously you've got some cash in your pocket to show for it. And, you know, the numbers look bad, and they should. The Mid-American Conference, they've been largely outclassed in many of these games. They've lacked athleticism, they've lacked size, they've lacked speed when facing some of the middle-tier teams, even from other lesser conferences. And in December, of course, almost all of the Mid-American Conference schools are at something of a disadvantage when it comes to practice. Not as nice to be practicing outdoors in December. Not even as nice to be practicing indoors for the MAC teams as it is for teams in other locations and other venues. But we need to isolate this trend a little bit. Over a five-year stretch, MAC teams were 2-15-1. Again, that one counting any game that goes into overtime, we're going to grade as a push in terms of, or a tie in terms of the regular result. So two wins in 18 bowl games in regulations, 3-15 against the spread. So what's happened over the last 2 years? Well, the MAC went 2-1 straight up, 2-1 against the spread last year as a conference. So far this year, 2-0 straight up, 2-0 against the spread. So this trend that looks so miserable over 7 years, you look at it over the last 2 years, MAC teams are 4-1 straight up and against the spread. Big money makers for those who have supported them. So nah, we get a conundrum from this. Is this really a 7-15 ATS pattern, or have we instead seen something that has ran its logical course and is now making an equally logical regression back to the mean? Here's a good way to break it down. Look at last Saturday's game between Ohio U and Utah State. Ohio U won 24-23 in that ball game, a late touchdown drive where they had to score several times on the last drive before it was actually ruled a TD. But a one-point win for the Bobcats. Now, this is an Ohio team that was playing for the MAC championship. They led that MAC championship game by 13 points in the fourth quarter. They were playing their fourth bowl game in seven seasons under Frank Solich. Remember, they were underdogs in this game to Utah State. And Utah State, you know, a nondescript team from the WAC, which is really a power rated even lower than the MAC. They hadn't been to a bowl since 1997. They snuck into the bowl game with four late gut check type of wins. They beat Hawaii by four, San Jose State by one. They beat Idaho in overtime. They beat New Mexico State by three. None of those teams went to bowls. So there was a little bit of home field edge here for Utah State. But still, we're talking about a four-hour drive. It wasn't like the place was packed with Aggies fans in that ball game. So basically, this was a classic case of a trend reversing itself. If not for that bad MAC history, Ohio U probably would have been favored in that game, maybe favored by more than a point, and Utah State would have taken the money despite losing by one. But because that bowl record for the MAC was well publicized, because the money came in against the MAC teams at the get-go, because of these factors, instead of Ohio U being favored in that ball game, they were underdogs. And that little extra edge in terms of point spread value for the Bobcats was the difference between winning a bet and losing a bet on Ohio U. So that's why this postmortem is necessary. If you think the MAC going 7-15 against the spread over the last 7 years is truly meaningful, you may be a little bit behind the curve. May need to rethink that a little bit.
When we come back, possibly the last time we'll ever mention Jim Tressel's name on this show in the Insider Six Pack. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then. Okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Right, it's time to pop the top on today's Insider Six Pack. But I need to make an anti-alcoholism reference here because I know I've been saying, hey, let's crack a beer at 11:30 a.m., drinking and gambling do not mix. I can't say that any clearer. If you're drinking, not a good time to be betting. If you're drinking more, not a good time to be making halftime. So today, for the Insider Six Pack, yeah, I'm popping a top on a six pack of Coke. All right, let's start in Southern Miss, or the Southern Miss South Carolina situation. On yesterday's show, we focused in the postmortem segment on the unusual distractions faced by the Southern Miss program as they head to Hawaii to take on Nevada on Christmas Eve. At least the Golden Eagles now know who their incoming head coach is going to be. That man, South Carolina defense coordinator Ellis Johnson. He's accepted the position. Johnson has been the DC at South Carolina for the past four seasons. But it's worth noting, he did once hold that same job at Southern Miss back, in the 1988-89 season. It's been a while, but Ellis Johnson does have that tie to the Southern Miss Golden Eagles. In the latest twist, of course, the announcement came 3 days after the team had already left for Hawaii, so it's going to be a while before the Southern Miss players get to meet their new head coach. Worth noting, this is the second loss so far from Steve Spurrier's staff at South Carolina. Running back coach Jay Graham already left to take the same job at Tennessee, which is his alma mater. Johnson not going to be coaching the New Year's Day Bowl for the Gamecocks against Nebraska. Lorenzo Ward will have the play calling duties on defense for South Carolina.
It was a time back in the mid to late 90s and early part of this millennium when Norm Chow's name came up with just about every head coaching vacancy on the West Coast. Finally got his job, fittingly, University of Hawaii. Chow grew up on Oahu's North Shore, so sort of a homecoming for him. Got his first job as a grad assistant for Lavelle Edwards at Brigham Young all the way back in 1973. Very good career as an offensive coordinator, three national championship rings at the college level. Also coached with the Tennessee Titans in that position, 3 years in the NFL. should be a pretty good fit. We wish he'd got the job when he's a little bit younger in his career. But should be offensively a good scheme for the type of players they can recruit. Question now going forward, though, will he be the Utah offensive coordinator up through the bowl game against Georgia Tech? We don't know that answer yet. From Chow yesterday, apparently wanting to stay on, he says, I'm here and I'm coaching, and it's all about the players. They know that. Kyle, referring to head coach Kyle Whittingham, addressed it a little bit prior to practice. If I am a distraction, I will leave immediately. I plan on being at practice tomorrow. We'll update you day by day how this unfolds. He does matter because of the weaknesses Utah has at quarterback. You'd like to get every practice you could out of him before they head to El Paso.
Last week, we noted that the NCAA had given an awkward exemption to Ohio State, allowing Urban Meyer and a couple of assistants to be out recruiting, despite the fact that Meyer is technically not the head coach yet, and the Buckeye season is still very much in progress. Yesterday, NCAA pulled the rug a little bit, but not nearly as much as they could have. The team is banned from bowl play next year. They're not going to play in the 2012 postseason. They're going to lose 4 scholarships on top of the school's own in-house penalty of 5 scholarships over a 3-year period. And then they're going to have a year of probation after that. So the sidebar worth noting here has to do with Mr. Sweater Vest himself, Jim Tressel, and his college coaching career. It's probably over because now the NCAA has a 5-year, quote-unquote, show cause penalty. It's going to be difficult for any program to hire Tressel before that 5-year ban has taken place. So that's, we're talking about December 17th, 2016. When Tressel will be eligible to be hired without show cause issues from the NCAA. And of course, at that point, he'll be 64 years old. No Division I team has ever hired a coach that was under a show cause sanction. And that includes, yeah, another Buckeye who skirted the rules, former basketball head coach Jim O'Brien, Kelvin Sampson at Indiana, guys who've really been hit with some hard sanctions. Sweater Vest Jim Tressel, he's got those same sanctions. Next time we hear about him again, he might be back coaching Youngstown State again.
Always fun giving the anti-Ohio State stuff to a Michigan grad. It just makes for...
Well, they cheat all the time. That's all they do is cheat and get away with it and win titles. We're jealous. Yeah.
Makes for great television, doesn't it? let's move on a little bit. Marcus Coker, key cog in the Iowa offense, pretty much the entire running game for Iowa. You're not going to see him in the Inside Bowl against Oklahoma. Coker gone for all they would say is a violation of the Hawkeyes' student-athlete code of conduct. We'll try to dig out a little bit more on that in the days to come. How big a part of this offense was he? 280 rushes, 1,384 yards, 15 rushing touchdowns, also caught 21 passes. Now look at those 280 rushing attempts. No one else on the team had more than 18. They got some young guys that have to get up to speed very, very quickly. Ironically, it was this very bowl, the Insight Bowl, where Coker first got on the map last year when Adam Robinson, who had been their leading rusher, was suspended. Coker ran for 219 yards, a couple of touchdowns, was the MVP in a win over Missouri. Not going to happen against Oklahoma this year.
Let's shift over to the college hardwoods. We have another semester break slash holiday setting in the Middle Tennessee State slash Ole Miss matchup tonight. They're going to be playing this one at the DeSoto Civic Center in South Haven, Mississippi. South Haven, 73-mile trip from the Ole Miss campus. But with alumni throughout the state, the Rebels should have at least a decent following in this venue. It's worth noting that Ole Miss did get former McDonald's All-American Jalon Kendrick on the court for the first time in Saturday's 86-82 loss to Southern Miss. But Kendrick, well, he didn't look like a McDonald's All-American in that game. He looked rusty. 0-2 from the field, no points, no rebounds, 8 minutes of playing time. Middle Tennessee head coach Kermit Davis had called this a, quote, NCAA opportunity game. And Blue Raiders are 10-2 this year. They already had early wins against Belmont and UCLA, nice resume builders for a tournament appearance. But they do come into this game a little bit shorthanded tonight. 6'5 guard Kerry Hammonds, he's out with a foot injury. He has 6 starts, averaging 20 minutes a game. 6'6 guard Jason Jones, doubtful with a back injury. He's got 3 starts this year and averaging more than 18 minutes per game.
Let's take a look at the North Carolina-Wilmington-Wake Forest game tonight and see if we might have one of these settings in which revenge does matter. First, let's note it's one of the most overused concepts in handicapping. Has almost no meaning in professional sports and almost no meaning in big games. And it always bothers us when we hear other handicappers or media people talk about revenge for a big setting, like a Michigan-Ohio State game, because it doesn't matter. At big settings, every team brings their A game. Where you want to find revenge are these little out-of-the-way games where a team ordinarily might not play at an A level, but chooses to. Think about this with Wake Forest, because NC Wilmington's coming to town. Usually you're not going to pack your A game for that matchup. Tonight, they just might. Last year, Wilmington comes to town, not only beats them 80-68, but enjoys some trash talking afterwards, and it seems like that may have gotten under the Deacon's skin a little bit. First from Coach Jeff Bezdelic, referring back to that. What I know about this UNC Wilmington team is this. They beat us last year, and they let us know it. He was asked to elaborate on the point by a media person. He said, I'll just leave it at that. And we go to one of the players, Ty Walker, 7-foot center, just became eligible a week ago. He had to sit out the first semester. Career highs in rebounds and points both in their win over Gardner-Webb Saturday. His quote, we viewed some of their comments in the paper. I guess you could say they punched us in the mouth, but we won't let it happen again. So NC Wilmington coming in, just the sleeper of a game? No, it looks like Wake Forest wants this one tonight. Maybe this is one setting in which revenge does matter.
When we come back, we're going to look for winners in some prime-time college hoop settings. It's money time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the number. Let's start in Chapel Hill, North Carolina tonight, where the Tar Heels minus 11 at home against Texas. And Dave, you and I have talked about Texas a little bit on this show before. Longhorns have some issues, perhaps, that the Tar Heels can exploit.
Yeah, if you watched our postmortem earlier in the week, you'll note that we thought that Texas got away with murder against Temple on Saturday, a game where they got the best of the officiating because they were allowed to. Different story tonight. You're going to get honest whistles and maybe a tough task for Texas. You've got so many freshmen in this rotation. Three starters, six of the top nine are freshmen, and we're considering this to be the first real road game for them. You look at their schedule, you'll see a road win at UCLA, but these UCLA games are just neutral environments this year. Away from Poly Pavilion, they're not drawing at all. So they haven't faced much pressure yet. And now again, when we said earlier that revenge tends to not matter too much in A versus A type games, a little chip on the Carolina shoulder tonight. They've lost to Texas 2 years in a row. Two seasons ago, kind of a weak North Carolina team got beat by 13 on the road. Last year, a better Carolina team, but one that was still just developing in December, lost on a buzzer beater against the Longhorns. So here's a case where a team is going to be primed to play their A game. And the reason we bring it up, and we usually don't in A versus A, is we expect Carolina to have the lead in this game. And it could be the fact that they feel they owe Texas something means that they don't take their foot off the pedal when they have that lead.
Well, yeah, I mean, North Carolina's got this tight rotation. Eight different players average more than 14 minutes a game. None of them average more than 31. And as you mentioned, Dave, the Texas team, very, very young. And the fact that they're going to be playing this more veteran NC North Carolina squad with that tight rotation mean we're going to see freshmen going against upperclassmen repeatedly, or matched up against upperclassmen repeatedly in this ballgame, which could lead to Longhorn issues. And frankly, if you're Rick Barnes, doesn't it make sense to let your team develop at a natural pace to kind of go through some of the growing pains at this stage of the campaign rather than play to the scoreboard here? The only way that Texas can really hang in this setting is if they slow the game down to a crawl. And I'm not sure that that's what Rick Barnes' best strategy is moving forward when we consider what Texas is going to be up against in terms of their big 12 schedule in the weeks and months to come. And let's not forget one other key factor here. That, of course, the play of North Carolina point guard Kendall Marshall. His numbers are remarkable. 122 assists versus 30 turnovers. The team is plus 84 in assist versus turnover ratio. And if you're not giving up easy buckets against that Longhorn pressure defense, Texas may have a difficult time finding the bottom of the basket.
Let's go to the Jefferson Civic Center in Birmingham, Alabama. Alabama, an 8.5-point favorite over Oklahoma State. Note, not the true Alabama home court. But again, it's another one of these settings where they probably draw better in Birmingham tonight than they would back in Tuscaloosa. The students are off campus, and a lot of Bama alums who want to see the team play, who either didn't want to travel to Tuscaloosa or couldn't get tickets because the students have rights to so many, get a chance to come out and cheer the team on tonight. Now the problem is one of market value. There are some matchup elements of this game that are favorable for Alabama, but when we talk about markets adjusting, over-adjusting, look at these Alabama pendulums. Dynamite tournament in San Juan, Puerto Rico to open the season. Beat Maryland, beat Wichita State, beat Purdue. So here's your coming team. The markets love them. Elevate the line. Well, what happened once they got back to the mainland? 0-5 against the spread. That line got moved a little bit too far. Teddy, at 8.5, is the line still too high for Alabama, or is it starting to get back to where we're allowed to at least consider the Crimson Tide a little bit?
Well, I mean, my thought process when we look at these point spread trends is I don't like to step in front of them until we see proof that the line has been adjusted properly. And Alabama, it's a classic case of Thanksgiving tournament creating an overvalued team or an undervalued team. And we see it all the time in college basketball where those Thanksgiving tournament results, and again, oftentimes you're in three games and 3 day settings, you have other factors involved in team success or failures. But we see the betting marketplace really concentrate on these tournaments, and hence the 0-5 ATS result. And many of those games haven't been close. They've lost by an average of double digits, by an average of 11 points per game against the spread. Betting markets weren't right on Alabama in their last game. They went to K-State, or they went to a neutral site game against K-State. You know, neutral site, quote, it was a home game for Wildcats. But the bottom line was, they got annihilated in that ballgame. Another bad loss for the Crimson Tide. This is an Alabama team that does some things very, very well. You know, they get after you. The guards, they guard the perimeter extremely hard. They're only allowing 25.8 shooting from three-point range. That's impressive, Dave. That really is. That tells you that, number one, when a team falls down, they have a hard time coming back. And number two, it speaks volumes about the athleticism they have on the perimeter, the ability to create turnovers, the ability to shut down teams from their own three-point shots. But is that going to be enough to get the Tide to cover the number here?
There's the conundrum. We want to make sure the number's in the right place because we like the matchups to Alabama. If you're going to beat Alabama on this court, you better have your chemistry together and you better be able to find ways to score. Now, Oklahoma State relies on three-point shooting a lot. Almost 29% of all of their scoring comes from long range. Bama doesn't give those shots up. Second is because of the pressure that Alabama extends, you better be deep. Oklahoma State just lost Fred Gulley. It was a key part of their rotation, had several starts. He's left the program. Makes him a man down. But here's the other part that we think could come into play tonight. Oklahoma State hasn't had a single player start in all 10 games this year. And only one, John Paul Olukemi, has started 9. All the other players, 8 starts or less. If that chemistry isn't where it needs to be, Alabama's the prime team to exploit it. Only problem, that 8.5 hanging out there. Whole different ballgame at 6.5, 7. They might have the info still just a little bit too high, but it certainly, from a matchup standpoint, looks like a game that Alabama may break that point spread, Schneid.
Breaking the point spread, Schneid. Love it. Malinsky with the slang. Good stuff. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the gridiron. Yeah, it's poinsettia bowl time as we go to money time, part 2.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Okay, poinsettia bowl, poinsettia, I don't know how to pronounce a stupid bowl name. as long as it's not sponsored by someone. It's not a Beef O'Brady situation that we're talking about here. But bottom line tonight, TCU minus 9, total 55.5. We have seen some Horned Frogs money come over the course of the last hour or so. Those 9s are getting gobbled up. 9.5 in many locations right now. But TCU playing in this bowl game for the third time in the last 6 years. Dave, are they interested?
I think they will be. Maybe more so than the market perceptions. If you go back and you chart the movement on this game, there were plenty of 11s out there at the start, which looked like the right number for these programs. But one of the things that's been awfully productive through the years, and we're talking about decades now, double-digit underdogs in the early bowl games. Prime reason for that. Usually, if you have a team favored by double figures in one of these early games, it means that they're a really good team that had a disappointing season. If you're laying doubles, that means you could have been somewhere else, and you're sort of relegated to a lighter place. TCU, a classic example of that. Coming off of a BCS bowl win in the Rose Bowl over Wisconsin last year, two overtime losses, the only blemishes this year. If they win one of them, just one of the two, they're likely in a BCS game this year. So are they disappointed to be here? We don't think so when we look at the character of this team and the way that Gary Patterson is selling the game to his players. This is the last go-round for TCU before they enter the Big 12. They know they have to elevate the recruiting at that point. Players know it. The coaches know it. So this is a bit of a showcase game for them. So I think that attitude's a little bit better. And boy, look at bowl experience. 10 bowls in 11 years under Patterson. This will be the third time in this particular bowl. And yeah, they already came out here and beat San Diego State by double figures earlier this year. This is a team that, if the focus is where we think it's going to be, is going to be very comfortable in this environment.
Yeah, and when we look at the Louisiana Tech element, I mean, the La Tech was a moneymaker for my clients and I this year, no question about it. I like that team. They made me money, and they cashed again and again in the same type of roles, as big dogs, as short favorites. They won in Ruston. They stole some wins on the highway. Heck, they won the WAC, which is something that, you know, they were considered to be a middle-of-the-pack team at best coming into the season, especially with a Frosh QB. And again, 7-0 straight up, 7-0 against the spread down the stretch. But mitigating circumstances there. They were plus 16 in turnovers during that run. And again, every one of those wins came against mediocre or worse WAC opponents. They did fare well in some early season tests. We saw them take Houston to the wire. In fact, they led that game in the fourth quarter. Houston, who ended up having an almost perfect regular season before losing the CUSA championship game to Southern Miss, Houston came back and won that game 35-34, La Tech cover. They were in the plus, they were plus three scores. I'm trying to remember, plus 20, plus 18 against Mississippi State. Took the Bulldogs into overtime. So those early season results certainly having an influence on this particular point spread. But when we put those two games under the microscope, I remember I was looking at Houston in that game at La Tech, and I ran into an article in one of the papers that was it was on a Wednesday that I was doing my research, and the article was I found a quote from Case Keenum saying, "Oh yeah, I haven't really looked at any film yet. I'm probably going to do that tonight or tomorrow." Meaning, I don't think Houston took La Tech all that seriously. I don't think Mississippi State took La Tech all that seriously. TCU, remember the team that went into Boise and beat Boise? I think they're going to take La Tech seriously in this one.
That's what really matters when we talk about the focus, because if the focus is there, look at the road ability of TCU and that games against bowl teams. Teddy mentioned they beat Boise. San Diego State's a bowl team. They beat them in double figures. Air Force will be bowling later. They beat them in double figures on the road. Wyoming, a bowl team. TCU beat them in double figures. There is a talent gap between these programs. Again, Louisiana Tech had a great run down the stretch, a lot of it bounce-oriented. So our inclination here is actually to fade that line move a little bit. At the opener of 11, we had nothing. At the minus 10, we had nothing. At 9, we have a little bit of TCU in our pocket. Could have a little bit more, but there is one caution. Antoine Hicks, their number 3 wide receiver, 33 catches this year. He was suspended yesterday. He's not going to play. Not a lot of experience behind him. It's going to be freshman David Porter getting the start. He's only got 5 receptions, although 2 of them did go for touchdowns. So we can have a little TCU in the pocket. But now, with Seeger kicking in Hollywood Knights in the background, Teddy, what can we put in our pocket for something a little more substantial today?
Yeah, we're not going to go with TCU as a play of the day for Wednesday. We're going to go to the hardwoods tonight. You know what? Clips were good to our pockets 2 days ago. We're going to go right back to the L.A. Clippers. -2.5, shop around. You can still find this number. The prevailing market number moving towards 3. There's still some out there. -2.5. The Clip joint over the Lakers. Yeah, NBA preseason. Let's make some money. That's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.